So how are you today?
Good.
And we are going to end, hopefully. Sometimes I stay a long time in certain chapters, and other times I go through real quick. And this particular one, what chapter are we in? 21. We're still in 21 because it's incomplete. All right? It's very important that we kind of, you know, the 21st chapter of Genesis has a lot of events, should I say, that have taken place that affect. Now, the first event we discovered was that Yahuwah talked or visited Sarah, right? At the end, of course, a quick conversation. She told Abraham to get rid of a couple of people. Now, Abraham was, and let's go back there, read it for a moment, because this is where it's very important. And it's Genesis 21, and it's verse 11. And if you have any other translation on this word, I would like to be able to hear what it may be. And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. What does any other translation have? Distress, okay.
Greatly.
Yeah, the word, yes, the verb from is very, is greatly, that's true. It's definitely every word.
Grievous.
Grievous. Sad. Yours says bad.
It's very grievous
because of his son. All right. So we have to say, because he was, his wife said something, which is not what Abraham wanted to hear. Because he didn't know why, until, of course, along comes the Creator and says, you're going to listen to your wife. What you said is true. So we're going to look at this word grievous. Or we're going to look at this word, as Ellie had said, bad. This word, by the way, is not... when they translate it into English, they made it sound soft peddling. Because we don't like to think that it's soft peddling. We like, that it's harsh in what his immediate reaction was. In Hebrew, we'll go through a few things here. You don't have to have these down, but I'm going to tell you Genesis 44, verse 5, is not this in which my Lord drinketh, and thereby, indeed, he divideth, yea, has done evil in doing so. Exodus chapter 5, verse 22. And Moses returned to Yahuwah and said, Lord, wherefore hast thou so evil entreated these people? Why is it that you have sent me? Verse 23, and since I came to Pharaoh to speak my name, he has done evil to this people. Neither hast thou delivered thy people at all. Leviticus 5, verse 4. And if thy soul swears, pronouncing with his lips to do evil or good, whatsoever it be that the man shall pronounce with this oath, it shall be and be hid from him, then he knows of it, then he shall by guilt be one of those. It's a pretty powerful word, isn't it? Evil. And so when we read that in English and they translate it and they soft pedal it, say, oh, he was displeased. Now what he was seeing was an evil thing. He says, well, okay, let's go on a little bit so we can have a little better picture. Let's go to Deuteronomy 15, verse 9. Beware, there be not a thought in thy wicked heart, saying, and seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and thy eye be evil against thy poor brethren, and thou givest him nothing. Now, that's a pretty powerful word, isn't it? So we get a picture here that Abraham... what was he thinking? They were just kind of, oh, I don't like this. Can we talk about this, Sarah? Sarah, let's have a chit-chat. No. And the eternal turned around and said, do not, Adam. I mean, sorry, Adam. Jeez. I mean, Abram. He says, verse 12, Genesis chapter 21, verse 12, back there again. But Elohim said to Abraham, do not let this be evil in the sight because of the lad or because of the bondwoman. She was seeing it as an evil thing, an evil action, an evil thought that was coming out of Sarah. Now, when we look at this thing, we have to say, wow, you mean Abraham was corrected? Yeah, he was corrected. All right, he didn't think that he knew in advance what was going on. He said, and to his mind, that was an evil action. And it displeased him, yes, about his son, what not what he was doing, but what she had planned to do with his son. All right? That's an evil action. Okay? So, yes. Okay. So, when we look at this thing and we have the kind of picture, this was really not a displeasing thing. It was really displeasing. All right, it was something that he was not going to do. He was not going to institute that evil act until along comes the Lord and says, yeah, you better do it. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. For it is Isaac your seed shall be called. Yet I will also make a nation of the man and of the son, rather, of the son and the bondwoman, because he is your seed. Now, when we talk about concrete and abstract, it's very concrete in our world that the sons of Ishmael are all over the place, aren't they? So when God says, I'm going to do it, he did it. Is that an abstract thing or is that a concrete thing? All right, very strong concrete because the Word of God is true. He's true to his word. Not only true to his word, he's just plain true. There's nothing abstract about him. He brings about, he says, and he does. And this is the reason why Abraham had to rise up early the following morning, because Abraham was not a man who lived in the world of abstract. He is a man who lived in the world of concreteness. And he knew the word of God was powerful. He wasn't about to challenge. Would you challenge? This guy the Eternal just said, listen to your wife. She's right. You're out. She do what she tells you to do. By the way, I'll handle the kid. Don't worry about it. So he had now this, and he kosher put upon her, and he's sent to a place in the wilderness. By the way, it's down there, verse 14, the latter part. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And we're going to talk about Beersheba today, because Beersheba is introduced in this particular chapter. But it wasn't Beersheba when she went there. It became Beersheba later. We'll see what happens here as the chapter clarifies it. We'll find out what. By the way, do you know what the phrase Beersheba means? We'll get there. Very, very important phrase. All right. And of course, she ran out of water. And so on and so forth. And then verse 16, and she went and sat down across from him at a distance about a bow shot. We didn't want the bow shot because Ishmael, became very, very good at doing a bow and arrow. Extremely accurate. He was pretty deadly with the bow and arrow. All right, but that's how that phrase came into saying, for Hebrew that is. And she said to herself, let me not see the death of the boy. And she sat opposite him and left her voice and wept. Now, verse 17, what does it say? Elohim heard the voice of the lad. Remember the very first time she was departed? He says, Melchahu said what? I hear your cry. Now, he's not saying, I hear yours. I'm hearing the lad's. We don't know what the lad said, but he must have been in a desperation of trying to stay alive. Obviously, he was dying. There's no ands, ifs, or buts about that. You can't get past that. And when the angel, or the Melech Elohim, called to Hagar out of the heaven and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for Elohim has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation. And of course we know that's what it is, and she lifted up her eyes and thus she saw the water. Unless it was, it's called a well. At that point in time, it's not really a well. Come to came a well later. Better means well. Okay? So we have this. She saw the better. No, the well wasn't existed yet. It was just a spring of water that came up. We'll get to that point in a minute. And of course, she saw and she drank and so on and so forth. But the most important thing is that Elohim was with the lad, verse 20, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. Remember I told you he's a very good bow and arrow guy? And that's why she was a bow shot away. Not just a short distance, but long away. She didn't want to be near him when he died. She didn't want to be around. Which is typical. I mean, a mother doesn't want to see her dying son die. Can't be around it. It's a little hard. And she was able to herself to endure, but he couldn't endure. All right? It's been interesting, though. And he dwelt in the wilderness of Haran. Now, where is Haran today? Do you know where it's at? Every Arab knows. Saudi Arabia. He went directly due east to what's called Haran. You can look on the world map, and they, some of your biblical maps, they put Paran in southern Israel. Sorry, it wasn't where it's at. When the Israelites wandered, they wandered in the wilderness of Paran over to the east side. They were along. Why was the Red Sea called the Red Sea? Anybody remember that?
Edom.
That's where Edom lived. Edom didn't live in Egypt, didn't live on the Sinai Peninsula. He lived in Edom. All right? So when you think about crossing the Red Sea, you got to think of that area. And now you know they got documentation and proof now that actually where they actually crossed when they crossed the Red Sea. They actually crossed that one into the land of Edom, or the Red. Edom means red. The Red Man. What was Edom known for? Being red. I don't know if his skin was red or was a redhead, but he was red. I mean, more prominent, shall we say, than his brother Esau. I mean, brother Jacob. So that land called Paran, and what it means is a place of caves. Place of caves. You remember when the journey, some of you, and we haven't gotten there, but many of you already read the journey of the Israelites wandering and heading toward Mount Sinai, and they had an area was called areas of caves. Remember that? There was something like 7 caves or 8 caves, a lot of caves around there. And you know why there were caves there? That's where you lived. Yes, well, let's say you started living in your house there, and you're living in there. You weren't ape men. You weren't aborigines. You were. Hey, it's already a house. You know, we're going to build one. There's one right there. Take care of it. And so people lived in those caves. So Paran, the place of caves. In southern Israel, it's desert. There's no cave down there. Yes?
Anywhere near Jordan? Or because Jordan...
Jordan's too far north. Got to go south. Okay. Toward the side of the... What's that? It's the Arabian desert down there. Goes into the water. You know where Aqaba is, where the
City of Allah.
See the log, yeah. So we have a picture of all these things taking place, and it's, of course, and she went and found a wife for him from the land of. Well, why not? That's where she came from. So she brought it. She got her got him a wife. Now, we've got to look at a word here. Oh, what kind of word do you think I'm going to look at? Para. Where they get the word paran. It means to glean. Take from. All right? It means also to boast or to explain oneself or to exalt oneself. Interesting phrase, isn't it? You take from someone and you exalt yourself. The land of Paran. Fascinating phrase. I thought you might be interested in that one. Of course, the next thing took place was, of course, Abimelech. I think it's kind of a funny section here. A humorous one to a degree. 22nd verse. He says, it came to pass that Abimelech, remember whom he was? Yeah. And Phicol, commander of his army, spoke to Abram, saying, Elohim is with you. Now, what's happening right here? That verse, what's going on? Why would Melech, Abimelech, Father Melech, Father King, that's his name means, bring in his commander, military commander? Well, do you think it was a pleasant little visit? He's going to come up and say, Abraham, let's have a chit-chat. Nice to see you. Let's visit. Oh, no. He came with his commander. Now, certain things were taking place in this world. Remember what happened a couple of years ago? Now, he says, verse 22, now therefore, swear to me by Elohim that you will not deal falsely with me, because he dealt falsely before 2 years ago, with my offspring or with my prosperity, but that according to the kindness that I have done to you, I gave you all these things, remember? I gave you all these blessings, you know? And you will do to me and the land which you have dwelt. And Abraham says, okay, I'll take the oath. I'll swear. I won't do that. And of course, he's going to swear in the name of Elohim. In this case, Shaddai. Right? Must be careful now, not to have too much motive on Abimelech yet. But when Abraham did do, he did give him his oath. All right? An oath. Very important thing. Abimelech was aware of Elohim and who Elohim was. How do we know that? 2 years earlier. Right? You can't deny the scene that took place with him and the women in his household. And so we know that's pretty well plain. But Abraham said he'd take the oath. And which it was different than Abimelech thought it was going to be. Now listen. Abraham rebuked Abimelech. He says, I'll take an oath. Now he turns around and he corrects Abimelech and his motives. Rebuked because of the well of water which Abimelech's servants has seized. That's the bitter. Bitter is a well. And Abimelech said, I do not know who has done this thing. You did not tell me, nor had I heard of it until today. Now, why would Abraham correct him if they had not known about it in advance? Abraham didn't buy that at all, did he? I mean, you can tell from the very beginning, he knew that Abimelech knew his men were taken and seized the well. All right? And Abraham took the sheep. So Abraham took sheep, oxen, and gave them to Abimelech, and the two of them made a covenant. I haven't figured out what part that Abimelech gave. It doesn't show us, but it does tell us him. At this time, Abraham was giving sheep and oxen. Remember last time Abimelech gave sheep and oxen to Abraham 2 years earlier? Now, we come along here, and it's happening now. Ah, what's taking place? He says, now Abraham set 7 ewe lambs of the flock by themselves. These 7 sheep were set aside from the oxen. Now remember, he gave sheep and he gave oxen as a oath. Now remember, when they made oaths in those days, as we should today, quote, if we make an oath, it should be a concrete commitment, not an abstract one, no strings attached, no ands, ifs, or buts, no going to the court and have the judge say, well, he took advantage of me, can I negate the covenant? No, you cannot. That's concrete, but in our world, we live in a world of abstract, so our laws pretty well let you abstract a concrete agreement, right? And there is not a record of anything that Abimelech gave to Abraham at this point in time. However, it does say that the two, both of them, made a covenant. That's what it says. It would require that Abimelech would have to give him something in order for his keep part of the part of the bargain. We don't know what it was. It doesn't tell us. It's not the issue. God didn't care about what Abimelech did. He wants us to pay attention to what Abraham did. Now, remember, Abimelech came with his commander. You know, remember there was another story later on, and there was somebody who came to visit his brother with his army. Remember who that was? They wanted to record.
The well. That's what he gave him in return for the sheep. Secure that well is his.
Daniel.
Yeah, yes, and sort of the well. But you notice the last verse, verse 34. It states that Abraham sojourned in the Philistines, meaning amongst Abimelech's area and territory, for many days. Which, to me, that means, all right, since Abimelech showed up with his commander, and Abraham has a very large, war force with him, with those servants, because, I mean, obviously he and a few of the guys took out a large group of people a few years earlier. It's more of, yeah, you can sojourn amongst our territory, Abraham, and we, our commander, will not attack you. We will not harass you. Yes, this well is technically yours, that's fine. But we won't. We're agreeing to allow you to stay here with your massive army that's with you, and we will not declare it an act of war.
Abimelech did make agreement, but his agreement wasn't about the well. No, Abraham made the agreement about the well by the 7 ewes, and Abimelech's agreement to the oath was, "We will not attack you." Okay, do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. So there was a difference between the two. I said he did make a pick, but you don't see it right off hand. You have to be careful how you see it and know it. I wouldn't have gotten that far. Thank you, Daniel. Anyway, where was I at now? And first thing that Abimelech says, what's going on here? But why are these 7 lambs? Why just set them aside? Now, I don't know what that means. If you had oxen or cattle, and you'd have sheep over here, and it was just female sheep. Now, female sheep, very valuable. Very, very valuable. And so over here, he set them aside at a different spot, a different place. And Abba couldn't figure out why you're doing that. And he says, I'll tell you why. These 7. What's 7? Complete. This is a complete thing. We don't know how many oxen there were. We We don't know if they're 3, 4, 5, 7. We don't need about them. We know this much. So Abimelech understood also. By the way, we live in a world sometimes that we think the world was not aware of 7 days. We think that the world was always, you know, and the only one really understood the 7 day cycle was, of course, Abraham, his wife, and, you know, a few people here, a few people there, but the rest of the world, dumb, the living, had no idea. Well, that's not true, because even all the way up until the Roman Empire, you know what the Roman Empire, what day the Roman Empire took day off? Shabbat, Sabbath. It wasn't until Catholic during, what's his name, that Constantine, yeah, what they decided to change it by law from the, emperor, that they finally changed that law. So you have a little a different picture here. But understand, Josephus is very clear about that. You've read Josephus? He's very clear about that. All the Roman Empire. Guess what? Seventh day, no one worked. So it was not uncommon. The world was accustomed to the 7 day cycle. They weren't ignorant of it. They knew what it was all about. So anyway, go here. And he calls the place Beersheba because. Now, what does Beersheba mean? Well, of seven. What really took place? Was it just a well that had a something to do with seven? No, it was an oath. It was an oath. So Beersheba, even though it says one of seven, basically the basic thing for that word, if I find it, Rick, is a well of the sevenfold oath. The well of the sevenfold oath. Because that's what took place. Did you notice that before? That phrase, which was rattled off so quickly to us, it is an association with an oath and not just seven. And so Abimelech said, okay, this is the oath and I will take it. I'll accept it. The well is yours. All right? I think it's very fascinating about that Beersheba. We know Beersheba shows up quite often. And as Daniel said, 34th chapter, Abe stayed in the land of the Philistines many days. So he stayed there, he lived there, we don't know how long. Well, we have an idea of approximately. It's not like he lived there for the rest of his life because he moved on. Okay. By the way, why do you think he was journeying in that area, remember? Why did he start going in that area in the first place, remember? What happened previously? Before Isaac was born. Sodom and Gomorrah. I want to picture your mind. Remember I said he's 360, 370 years from the flood? We have in our mind, because we have this wonderful modern, we don't have one here, a globe, and we look at the areas called Saudi Arabia, and we look at the area called Southern Israel, we look at the area called the Sinai Peninsula, we look at the big, huge, giant, massive desert known as the one in Africa. Now, we know from Scripture that before southern Israel became a desert, it wasn't. It was lush. A lot of trees, a lot of land, a lot of lush things. Water was, there was no such thing as a dead sea. Didn't exist. Became dead after, not before. During the Roman Empire, this big, huge, massive desert out there in northern Africa wasn't a desert. What was it? Big, huge farm land. Like we have a wheat crop, had trees, it had everything that everything else had. But we have it in our mind set because, see, we see it now, it always been that way. Right? And history shows you that's not. I mean, you can go back in your own self and find out that in history, in those places, they were still only 300, 400 years from the flood. You think that after the flood, the water disappeared everywhere? All of a sudden we have Death Valley because now all of a sudden, you know, 300 years, there's no water? Oh, no, it takes a while for that water to either evaporate or move, or for the east wind. East wind. Yes.
And you think about, like you're talking about North Africa, is that a lot of what causes desert formation is the over-abuse of agriculture. It doesn't develop immediately. It's the same thing's happening in Mongolia. It takes a long time.
It takes a long time for land to turn into a desert. But see, we have a picture of it being always that way. Yes.
It can happen fast when God does it.
Okay. When he did to southern Israel, at Sodom and Gomorrah, yeah, it happened fast. But that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying here is that don't picture that only 300 years or 400 years after the flood that there was a big, huge, giant Sinai Peninsula that was full of nothing but rocks. And that Saudi Arabia was full of nothing but rocks and desert. And that all around, the only lush place there ever was where? Between the two rivers? Why would they even think about moving? Why would God even have them move from there all the way to the Mediterranean coast? Because if it's all desert, it's all desert. Yes.
Sodom and Gomorrah were in a fertile valley.
Fertile valley. Now, so I want to kind of try to picture the world that it was different than what we see today. Look at our own country. Man has come, human beings, I'm not saying America, but man, human beings have come, what have done? They've taken out this many trees, this many trees, this many trees, and all of a sudden now you got a bunch of plains out there. And they're susceptible to one major thing, tornadoes, hurricanes. There used to be an awful lot. Wisconsin was full of a forest. It was so dense forest, it was as dense as one time Oregon and Washington was, dense with forest. You don't see that now. Ohio, dense with forest. When you travel through Ohio, do you see trees? Cornfields, 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 cornfields. And so what happens when we do that kind of thing, something just could disrupt the land. When you disrupt the land, the inevitable is going to take place. And we said there both with what happened in Northern Africa. It was called, they just harvested the wrong things, and destroyed the land. All right. Ouch. All right. Now, that being said, I want to go on to a word. Remember last week I explained a word? And 2 weeks ago, again, I explained another word. I'll explain another word here. It's used quite often. We use it quite often. A lot of our songs have it. Olam. What does Olam mean? Forever. So now we're going to learn a little bit about Hebrew. And the reason why it's important, there's a song, I can't remember the name of the song, it's an American song. In fact, I think the title was On Clear Day You Can See What? So on a clear day you can see Olam. Now, let's look at this word. The word Olam comes from the word Olam. And Olam means to conceal, to hide, not to reveal. And we use this word forever. Well, it's a bad translation 99% times in the Bible. And so we think about this, and we think of his kingdom is Olam. Now let's get down to concreteness, all right? It means, and very fascinating, it has several meanings with the word Olam. Oh, actually, it's not Olam, it's Alam. That's the verb form. It does mean to veil or to hide or to conceal and to put away, hide behind. And we have this idea. Now, in biblical Hebrew, if there is a mountain range here, and there's a mountain range there, what do they say? I can lo olam. They can't see olam. Why? Because it's hidden. Concrete. Physical eyesight. What's over that mountain range is Olam. Forever concealed. All right? Until you climb the mountain. And then you get to see the Olam. All right? You get to see that what was concealed. It's very concrete. So when you look at this word Olam and start thinking about it, you start saying, it doesn't mean forever. It means until I get to see it. By the way, Olam is not future tense. Olam is present tense. What that means is that if you can climb to a high peak, you can not only look Olam, where Olam, that which is hidden, you get to turn all the way around and see everything that was Olam to you before. Right? All right, now we move into the Word of the Living God. And he says, I want you to soar like an eagle. Why would he want you to soar like an eagle? So you can fly high and you can see everything. Of course, there's the fog. There is, of course, the fog becomes a veil, becomes an olam, becomes a thing you cannot see through until God lifts the veil. Right? So now what has, when Peter, Apostle Paul said, when they will lift, when God lifts the veil, when he lifts the olam, what will happen to the house of Israel? They what?
They'll see the truth.
They'll see the truth they want. Now, I tell you, olam is not what we think of the future. Olam is something you get to see what was in the past, that was hidden, veiled. It'll be clearer. You'll understand the past. You'll understand the present, and you'll understand the future all at the same time. And this is where we have this fantastic, I'll get to that hopefully next week, where he said, I am who I am, or I am that I am what I am. He is the one who says, when you come to my world, you will be able to see all of the alarm, all that which is hidden, all that which is concealed, all that which you did not know, you will be able to see it. Not at a lifetime of 40,000 billion years, but instantly. Okay? We have this thing about, I'll talk about next week, about his name. We have these songs that say, he who was and is to come. And because of our English, we picture him as being in the past. Oh, he was there, but he's now here, and he's going to be there. No. He is there in the past. He is here in the present. And he is there in the future. He is not wondering what's going to happen because he doesn't have an olam with him. You understand what I'm saying? He can see everything. And when God reveals and opens up our eyes, and Apostle Paul uses the phrase, when the secret things now are being revealed, he's saying the olam is being opened up. Olam is being removed from our eyesight. So I say the kingdom of God is olam. It is until when? It is no longer hidden. It's no longer, it's present. It'll always be there every step of the way. By the way, and you'll see it. Oh, it was always in the past. It's always in the present. It's always in the future. Yes.
Understanding.
Complete understanding of everything. Past, present, and future, just as he is. For we will see him as he is. Not just in spirit, but, the Apostle Paul says, in the same mindset that his mind is set in. And by the way, his mindset is not in Hebrew, Greek, Italian. It's in the God mindset. Sees a whole lot more than we can ever see. So when you think of the word olam, now think of that song of, on a clear day you can see forever. You know what that means. Doesn't mean you get to see. No, it's clear. All the way around. I got the picture all at once. All right? So it's kind of a neat word, right? So we talk about the word olam. Kind of a neat word, but it does mean to veil, to conceal, to hide. And it remains hidden until the Creator of heaven and earth. And what did Yeshua say to his apostles? Blessed are your eyes. Why? Because he has allowed you to see. Isn't that a fantastic thing? They are not in the Olam world. That's why when you can look at the apostles, read the apostles, read what they're saying, they're not talking about a world they can't see. They're not talking about something they don't understand. They're talking about something that the veil is gone from them. They can see forever, if I could use that terminology. They see the past. They see the present. They see the future all at once. And the prophets were that way too. Abraham was noted for seeing everything. What was Abraham looking for? He knew it was going to exist. The kingdom that was not there yet. He saw it. Isn't that fantastic? Now, when you say, I need to have the faith of Abraham, start looking at this thing and say, I'm going to ask God to lift the olam from my eyes that I may be able to see. Right? Does that make sense to you? That's my little short message for today. And we're finally finished with the 21st chapter of Genesis. Well, next week, it's going to be the 22nd chapter. Now, I'm not going to tell you how long I'm taking there. But I just find that this is a very fascinating book, and I just love the book of Genesis. It teaches me an awful lot.